Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from NPR.org and OnThisDay.com. Question number one. Which jazz tune flirts with fall colors? Hint, the lyrics to this 1945 French song were translated into English by Johnny Mercer and recorded over 1,400 times by such musicians as pianist Bill Evans in 1960. So what's the name of that 1945 French song? Is it A, Autumn Leaves, B, Harvest Moon, C, The Boys of Fall, or D, The Four Seasons, Autumn? And question number two. It was on this very day back in 1976 that Rick Dees and his cast of idiots received a gold record for which song? Hint, here's a snippet from this certified platinum hit song. Sound familiar? 1976, so what's the name of this disco song? The answers to these two important musical trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. And our transitions come to us from that way site, onthisday.com. And today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of October the 4th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1881, that Edward Laveau received a patent for the player piano. 1881 today. And it was 22 years ago today, back in 1997, that Farm Aid 97 raised over $1 million for U.S. farmers. 1997, today.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd.
Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack.
I don't care if we never get back. Let me root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. So it's one, two, three strikes, you're out at the ballgame.
The Andrews Sisters take us into our country music news. It's an article entitled The Old Ball Game. Country music legend Charlie Pride's first love was America's pastime. This is published in AARP, the magazine, September 2019 issue. For me, baseball was it. As a kid, I used to sit on the porch of our house in Mississippi and think there must be something out there better than milking these cows and picking this cotton and pulling weeds for the hogs. I'd look up at the clouds and wonder how it'd be to float on them. Then when they said Jackie Robinson was going to the Brooklyn Dodgers, I said, oh boy, here's my way out of the cotton fields.
For it's one, two, three. three strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Most of my experience as a ball player was in the old Negro American League. I came into the league right after the greats like Ernie Banks, Hank Williams, and Willie Mays. I was trying to get into the majors as a pitcher, but I cracked my elbow in 1956. There had been a major league scout following the team and watching me pitch, but after I got hurt, I didn't see that scout anymore. I was drafted that year, and when I got out of the Army, I tried out with the Los Angeles Angels. I tried to hurry up and look good, but my arm got so sore, I seemed like I didn't have nothing, so they sent me packing. After a point, I figured I'll just make enough money to buy my own team and put myself on the roster. Well, I got a little busy with the country music business, but I eventually bought a team, the Texas Rangers. I've been going to their spring training since Ted Williams was their manager. I used to go in right along with them and do half of what they do up until I was about 60. Now I've got cartilage in my right knee that's leaving me, so I can jog, though I'm not able to run anymore. A lot of people think baseball is just another sport where the coach designs the play. Ain't no designing, no playing baseball. If you're in the field, you've got to be ready, whether it's a blipper, a blooper, a sizzler, or a dribbler. Everybody's got to be ready. This article was as told to Pam Windsor. AARP, the magazine, September 2019. And in classical music news, we have this article entitled, "The Glory to Hong Kong, the Composer of the City's Protest Anthem Speaks." This is written by Leah Lee, South China Morning Post, on the 24th of September, 2019. Since it was released in early September 2019, a Cantonese song, "Glory to Hong Kong," has been widely shared online, starting with a digital platform, which anti-government protesters primarily used to discuss tactics. The song has since reached a wider audience, including some Hong Kongers, who regard it as the city's national anthem, and it is regularly sung by groups suddenly gathering in shopping malls or parks, as well as during larger demonstrations across the city. The song's composer is a young local musician identified only as Thomas DGX, who said he composed the number in response to online calls for a theme song to unite protesters and boost morale. Anti-government demonstrators swamped major shopping arcades across Hong Kong earlier in September for a series of singing protests in their latest efforts against the now-shelved extradition bill. The new song has spread like wildfire recently, replacing the previously popular "Sing Hallelujah to the Lord" and "Do You Hear the People Sing," a number also commonly heard during the 2014 Occupy protests. The rallies were peaceful, in sharp contrast to the scenes of escalating violence between protesters and police over the past 3 months that have resulted in the deployment of water cannons, tear gas, rubber bullets, and beanbag rounds. Vivian C., who studies nursing at Tung Wah College, joined the rally. This song, "Glory to Hong Kong," shows the process of more than 3 months of protest. It tells how we got to the current stage, from peaceful protest in the beginning to police violence. I have been involved from the beginning. I have a deep feeling for this. Ms. Tang, a resident who took part in the rally, said, "Glory to Hong Kong was a great representation of the agony the city had gone through over the past few months and the hopes that people still held for the future. I cry listening to that song," she said, adding that she especially liked its optimistic ending, a wish for glory, justice, freedom, and democracy to emerge in the city.
The night is bitter, the stars have lost their glitter, the winds grow colder, suddenly you're older, and all because of the man that got away.
Judy Garland, The Man That Got Away, introduces our jazz and blues music news. This is from People magazine, October 7, 2019. People picks the best stuff to watch, read, and listen to this week. This is edited by Tom Gliotto. Oscar buzz, the movie Judy. Renee Zellweger is sensational as a Hollywood star yearning for a rainbow. Frank Sinatra reportedly said that Judy Garland gave herself so completely and so desperately she seemed to die each time she sang in concert. You could say she sacrificed herself on the altar of entertainment, a suggestion both enthralling and mortifying. That's Judy in a nutshell. Renee Zellweger gives a terrific performance as the legendary star at the end of her short, messy life. After years of substance abuse, she died of an accidental barbiturate overdose in 1969 at age 47. The film begins as Garland arrives in London for a series of what are meant to be comeback concerts. With The Wizard of Oz decades in the past, she needs the money and she needs the work. Her last attempt at a Hollywood comeback, 1967's Valley of the Dolls, ended disastrously with her being replaced by Susan Hayward. Judy Davis arguably did a better job of capturing Garland's manic fragility in the ABC miniseries Life with Judy Garland, Me and My Shadows. But Zellweger's more soulful and heartbreakingly bruised and does her own singing. She's like a songbird trying to make itself heard in a blizzard.
You burn up, tomorrow he might turn up. There's just no let up, the live long night.
And in music research and technology, we have this article written by Lita Searcy, and it's published by Duke Voice Care Center's Manual of Singing Voice Rehabilitation, published in 2016. This is Appendix 14H, Vocal Pacing for Choral Singers. Vocal pacing means achieving a balance of voice use and voice rest. As a choral singer, you are a vocal athlete. Your voice needs regular vocal exercise, and you need to have good vocal technique for a lifetime of vocal health. If your voice doesn't get regular vocal exercise, your skill might deteriorate over time, and the intense vocal demands of rehearsal and performance might tire you out. If your voice is not getting enough rest, you may be at risk for developing a voice injury or exacerbating an existing injury. Number one, practice excellent vocal pacing relative to your speaking voice. Number two, if you engage in multiple performing activities or a lot of recreational singing, you may not need to decrease your overall vocal load to bring voice use into optimal balance. You may need to do that to decrease it. See relevant vocal pacing handouts for tips that are customized to your vocal activities. Student singers, a cappella group singers, active professionals, worship singers, and so on. Number three, vocal fitness is essential for lifelong singing health. If you have never taken voice lessons, consider doing so to develop and enhance your vocal technique. Look for a teacher who is experienced in teaching your style of singing, classical, contemporary, gospel, and so on. Even if you had vocal training in the past, it can be beneficial to take a refresher now and then. Working with the right voice teacher can help you develop a vocal exercise regimen that is just right for your voice and your singing goals. Number 4, regular practice of vocal exercises is critical for keeping your voice strong and healthy. Singing with the choir once or twice a week may not be enough to keep your voice in shape. Think of rehearsals and performances as being comparable to running a marathon. Runners make sure to train and prepare for the big race. You should be exercising your voice a little bit throughout the week to be ready for your big race. Number 5, practice your choir music outside of rehearsal. A choir rehearsal is very cognitively demanding. You have to follow the music, watch the conductor, listen to the singers around you, monitor your own singing, and anticipate what's coming up. It can be hard to focus on using good vocal technique. Preparing your part in advance and working on your vocal technique will help you use your voice in the most efficient and skillful way during the rehearsal. Some of your practice can be accomplished, quote-unquote, mentally, by thinking through the part in your head or listening to a recording while following along with your music. Number 6, consider keeping a voice journal to track all of your voice use, speaking, and singing. If you notice that your voice is often fatigued, you may be using your voice too much, or you may not be exercising your voice regularly enough. Keeping a voice journal will help you track the peaks and valleys of voice use. Determine how they correspond, how vocally fit you feel, and adjust your vocal load accordingly. Number 7, finally, plan voice use well in advance. When vocal demands increase, such as before a big concert or event, find ways to offload other voice use. This may include deferring social plans, especially those that require speaking in noisy environments, taking a day or two off from work if your job is vocally demanding, or reducing other taxing vocal activities, such as teaching Sunday school, public speaking and presentations, leading meetings, and so on. Consider making a chart or calendar to keep track of vocal activities to guide your planning. 5, 6, 7. Tilly and the Walls cover of Sesame Street's ABC song introduces our popular music news. How Sesame Street started a musical revolution 50 years ago, the television show united children's education, puppetry, and songs. Pop stars have been singing the Muppets tunes, and vice versa, ever since. This article is written by Melanie Rizik, published in the New York Times on the 22nd of August, 2019.
It's for Cat. Will you sing it with me? 1, 2, 3, Cat. D is for dance. And do you want to sing it again? Yeah! A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P.
How many ways can you sing about the letter B? On Sesame Street, that question has many furry answers. Since its inception in 1969, the public television show has redefined what it means to teach children through TV, with music as its resounding voice. Before Sesame Street, it wasn't even clear that you could do that. Once the series began as a radical experiment that joined educational research and social idealism with the lunacy of puppets and the buoyancy of advertising jingles, it proved that kids are very receptive to a grammar lesson wrapped in a song. Big-name stars lined up to make guest appearances that have become the stuff of legend. Stevie Wonder and Grover, Loretta Lynn and the Count, Smokey Robinson in a marauding letter U. And long before inclusion was a curriculum goal, Sesame Street made a point to showcase Afro-Caribbean rhythms, operatic powerhouses, Latin beats, Broadway showstoppers, and bebop, alongside its notably diverse cast. Sesame Street is one of the earliest examples of the musical I experienced, says Lin-Manuel Miranda, who grew up adoring I Love Trash, and called its singer, Oscar the Grouch, a character so singular that he changes the way you see the world at large. I learned from Sesame Street that music is not only incredibly fun, but also an extremely effective narrative and teaching tool, he added in an email. On top of that, their songs are the closest thing we have to a shared childhood songbook. Miranda began composing for Sesame not long after his first Tony win in 2008. His friend Bill Sherman, a fellow Tony winner, became the Sesame music director the following year. Today, with online viewership in the hundreds of millions, the series still hosts pop superstars Janelle Monáe, Romeo Santos, Ed Sheeran, Sia, Katy Perry, Bruno Mars on the updated streetscape, where Nina Simone sang To Be Young, Gifted, and Black in 1972. Now, as it marks its 50th anniversary after 4,526 episodes, not to mention specials, movies, albums, and more, the legacy of Sesame is clear. It impacted the music world as much as it shaped TV history, inspiring countless fans and generations of artists. And the show is still innovating, finding ever more ways to sing out loud, getting to Sesame Street. Research had shown that children were more attuned when they watched with caregivers, so in came the celebrity appearances. On the second episode, James Earl Jones enunciates the alphabet in thematically slow tones and parodies of songs that Mom and Dad would know.
Capital City skyline photo, skyscrapers shine the sun so, low in the sky, the secretaries at the hot dog vendors, cabs honk at the bicycle messengers, rolling by.
And from this capital city, we have this review of Cage the Elephant's new album, Social Cues. It's given 3 out of 4 possible stars. And this review is published in The Week magazine, May the 10th, 2019. Cage the Elephant, who recently performed here in Raleigh, has never been an easy band to pin down, said Stephen Thomas Erlewine in AllMusic.com. Still, it's a bit startling that the Kentucky alt-rockers, last heard on Tell Me I'm Pretty, have abandoned the rough-and-tumble aesthetic that won that effort a 2017 Grammy for Best Rock Album. The group's fifth album beats to a neon-lit pulse appropriated from the glory days of MTV, evoking Beck's, who, by the way, performed with Cage the Elephant and Spoon recently in Raleigh. Pan-cultural pop more than guitar-driven garage rock, it's a reminder that Matt Schultz and his 5 bandmates are primarily pastiche artists, favoring style and sound over a finely owned song. On Social Cues, no 2 songs in a row ever sound alike, from the surf rock banger Broken Boy to the catchy alt-pop title track, said Andy Crump in PastelMagazine.com. Unfortunately, though, all 13 tracks happen to be pretty gosh darn good. None is truly memorable. It isn't a crime for an album to merely be good and to fail to brand itself directly on the brain, but Cage the Elephant has taught its fans to expect even more. So how'd you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our second question, it was on this day back in 1976 that Rick Dees and his cast of idiots received a gold record for which song? And I played a snippet of this disco song as a hint. Name a song? Disco Duck. As noted in songfacts.com, the disco duck is sort of a chicken dance with an awkward flapping motion. The song is about a guy who earns his wings on the dance floors with these moves. The duck provides commentary. A native of Greensboro, North Carolina, Dees launched his radio career at the age of 17 as host of Country Music Show. And he switched to Raleigh's WKIX while studying radio TV motion pictures with acting at the University of North Carolina. He recorded Disco Duck with an array of top session musicians while hosting a show for WHBQ in Memphis. The single went on to sell more than 6 million copies. And the answer to our first question, which jazz tune flirts with fall colors? Correct answer, answer A, Autumn Leaves. As noted in NPR.org, pianist Bill Evans included the standard Autumn Leaves, originally a French song, on his 1960 album Portrait in Jazz. His chords, colored in brilliant reds and golds, set a fall mood, while Scott LaFaro's bass and Paul Motion's drums make it swing. There's a noticeable chill in the air. The leaves are starting to shift color, and perhaps you find yourself turning a little more inward in your mood and your musical tastes. And as noted in current research in jazz, Autumn Leaves is the most important non-American standard. It was a chart hit in both Europe and America, and it is the eighth most recorded tune by jazzmen, just before All the Things You Are. It has been recorded about 1,400 times by mainstream and modern jazz musicians alone, including Cannonball Adderley, Louis Armstrong, John Coltrane, Miles Davis, and Duke Ellington, to mention but a few. So let's close out today's program with the 1952 Stan Getz cover of this song, Autumn Leaves. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. And as we leave you, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Music Review, readily available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. Now, if you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me, Randy Thompson at 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.